To this Sunday service. We welcome all regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, factors that will sometimes separate us in the larger culture. If this is your first time visiting us, please welcome a special welcome to you, and please join us after the service for refreshments and conversation, and feel free to take any brochures on Unitarian Universalism that you'll find on the wall near the outside door where you came in. Also out there, you'll see a guest book, and we invite you to sign our guest book so that we can get back in touch with you again and tell you some things that are coming up. People with name tags that have blue dots on them are members of this congregation, and they supposedly know everything there is to know, but anybody with a name tag will at least have been here once or twice before and can tell you what their experience is if you'd like to ask them some questions. Because our services may differ from week to week, we encourage you to come back a few more times to get a flavor of the services and of our community, and especially during the next few months when we'll be having a variety of lay leaders and guest ministers in our pulpit while we explore options for our ministry. Now is the time to turn off cell phones and anything else that'll go beep during the service. Parents of small children are reminded that we have childcare and religious education classes, although I don't know if we have them today. Do you know? Yes, there's classes today, too. If you choose to keep your children with you in the worship room, please respect our need for this to be a time of quiet and peaceful reflection. We have a couple of announcements from the floor. I think our first one is about the upcoming service auction, and I'm looking for Jack. There you are. Okay, this is we'll have Jack come up, and Jack and Carol come up.
Good morning. The auction is 3 weeks away, and I think I need to implore everybody to please get their forms in right now. If we had the auction tomorrow, it would last around 20 minutes.
Wait. You can't kind of just harangue people like that. You know, it's Sunday morning. People want something a little lighter, a little gentler in tone. Something with a little humor in it.
Oh, we should, like what, sing The Hills Are Coming Alive with the Sound of Music? That's going to help?
No.
We need forms.
You know, like maybe a little joke or a little skit.
You're going to tell a joke. I've been married to you for 37 years. You can't tell a joke.
I can tell a
joke. Nobody from Cincinnati has ever been funny. What? You're going to tell them a joke.
I can tell a joke.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this one.
Okay, I have a joke. Okay, well, there was this little boy, and he went up to his mom because he was kind of confused about things, and he said, "Mom, is God a man or a woman?" And his mom looked down at him, and she was trying to kind of wrestle with the best way to answer this question, and so she said, "Well, God is both a man and a woman." I think she was a Unitarian. And so this little boy looked up at her again and kind of nodded his head, and he said, "Well, is God black or white?" And the mother said, "Well, God is both black and white." So this little child is really kind of confused and says, "Well, Mom, is God gay or straight?" And the mother says once again, "God is both gay and straight." And the little boy looked up at her and said, "Mom, is God Michael Jackson?" See, they laughed.
Just get your forms in.
Linda McNeil has an announcement as well.
Hi. I am acting chair, so I will act like a chair. I'm acting chair of the fan club of Jerry Morton, and I'm also the acting chair of the social outreach committee. And in those two capacities, we need some immediate help for Jerry, some very specific things, and I would like to tell you exactly what they are. And please, if you can help, it's just a short-term need. Starting on Friday, April 15th, that night, not Saturday, but then starting again Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, ending the 23rd. So the 15th to the 23rd, we need people to come to dinner at Jerry's house. You just bring something very simple. She lives in Carmel. You would be asked to just bring something very simple and have dinner with her. And we also need people to come for lunch Monday through Friday, April 18th to the 23rd. So I'm not talking about this week. I'm talking starting Friday of this week. It would be a very simple, it would take you maybe about 2 hours to come, have some lunch, clean up, and leave. She does not need medical care, but she definitely needs people next week. If you can do that during that week, please let me know, and I'd be happy to schedule you for one of those slots. And if you have any other questions, please ask. Thank you.
It's now time for us to begin the service proper. Please settle in and enjoy the music of the prelude. Good morning. My name is Ed Teeberger. I'm a member of the worship committee and the worship assistant for today. We have with us today visiting Ms. Cheryl Walker. Welcome. Ms. Walker is currently serving as interim minister at the Unitarian Church of Montclair. She recently graduated with a Master of Divinity degree from the Union Theological Seminary in New York, where she was awarded the Maxwell Fellowship for the Promise of Excellence in Parish Ministry. Prior to pursuing Unitarian Universalist Parish Ministry, Cheryl spent over 20 years as a manager in information technology for a variety of corporations. She is a member of the Community Church of New York, where she has served as co-chair of the Homeless Shelter Committee and the chair of the Adult Religious Education Committee. Welcome, Cheryl.
Stereo. Good morning. Our opening words this morning, I know I'm going to knock one of these over before I leave here. Our opening words this morning are by Robert French Levens. Holy and beautiful the custom which brings us together in the presence of the Most High, to face our ideals, to remember our loved ones in absence, to give thanks, to make confession, to offer forgiveness, to be enlightened, and to be strengthened. Through this quiet hour breathes the worship of ages, the cathedral music of history. Three unseen guests attend: faith, hope, and love. Let all our hearts prepare them a place. I now invite you to join in our chalice lighting, which is printed in your order of service.
Please stand. May the light of this flame illuminate our lives and strivings of the Spirit. May it heal misunderstanding and strengthen love. And please remain standing for our unison affirmation. Love is the doctrine of this fellowship. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek truth in love, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony. Thus do we covenant with one another.
Now it's time for our fellowship greeting. Please take a moment to greet one another, after which we will start with hymn number 128. It's now time for the children to go off to their religious education classes. Please join me in singing the children out. Candles of Joys and Sorrows helps us foster a sense of community by giving us an opportunity to share those events in our lives with each other that are important to us. If you have some sorrows, joys that you'd like to share with the congregation, please come up now, light a candle, and speak to the group.
I'm Katie Alberti, and I'm lighting a candle of joy. One of the reasons my husband John's not here today, and I'm going to be leaving in about 5 minutes, is he's receiving an award from the District Lions Club for all the work he's done for the Ossining Lions Club. He's been trying to set up their charitable, what is it? There's a special IRS classification for charity, which has turned into months and months of paperwork and stuff, and so they're giving him an award, and I'm proud of that.
My name is Carla Casisto, as most of you know. I've been having a lot of tough times lately. My daughter, Katie, is in a residential treatment place in Pennsylvania, and the good news is that she's doing a lot better, and you'd recognize her now as the fairly happy kid she was when she was 12 years old before all the problems started. So she is doing a lot better. She's making progress. And I have a benefactor in Texas who is someone I'm having a relationship with but still lives in Texas, and he helped me buy a new car, so that's also good. So I have some way to get down to Pennsylvania to see Katie every week. So it's joy with a little bit of caution because I don't want to get too excited, you know, considering how bad things have been. And they are getting better, though.
Hi, I'm Susie Novak. This is a candle of trepidation. Some of you have noticed the change in color of my hair. It's because my son got his driver's permit. I'm now being chauffeured to school every morning. We will live through this like everybody else does.
Hi, I'm Ann Jaffe, and I'd like to light a candle with two thoughts in mind, actually, or two gratitudes in mind. I found out yesterday that I was rejected from a really great job opportunity, and I'm really grateful because I wasn't appropriate for that job at all, and it probably would have killed me to take it anyway. And I'm mostly grateful that I'm at a place where I can see that and appreciate that fact. And I'm also grateful for last night Carol and Jack and Carol Goldman and I were at a show at the Paramount Theater for improv and comedy. And I'm grateful for the friendship and the fun we had and for the fact that the improv seemed terribly appropriate for me at this particular point in my life.
I light one more candle for those joys and sorrows that are unspoken yet are still in our hearts.
Our reading this morning is called An Island of Peace Within One's Soul by Howard Thurman. A beautiful and significant phrase, Island of Peace Within One's Own Soul. The individual lives his life in the midst of a wide variety of stresses and strains. There are many tasks in which he is engaged that are not meaningful to him, even though they are important in secondary ways. There are many responsibilities that are his by virtue of training, of family, of position. Again and again, decisions must be made as to small and large matters. Each one involves him in devious ways. No one is ever free from the peculiar pressures of his own life. Each one has to deal with the evil aspects of life, with injustices inflicted upon him, and injustices which he wittingly or unwittingly inflicts upon others. We are all of us deeply involved in the throes of our own weaknesses and strengths, expressed often in the profoundest conflicts within our souls. The only hope for surcease, the only possibility of stability for the person is to establish an island of peace within one's own soul. Here one brings for review the purposes and dreams to which one's life is tied. This is the place where there is no pretense, no dishonesty, no adulteration. Whatever passes over the threshold is Simon pure. What one really thinks and feels about one's own life stands revealed. What one really thinks and feels about other people, far and near, is seen with every nuance honestly labeled. Love is love. Hate is hate. Fear is fear. Well, within this temple, this island, is the temple where God dwells. Not the God of the creed, the church, the family, but the God of one's heart. Into God's presence, one comes with all of one's problems and faces God's scrutiny. What a person is, what one's plans are, what one's authentic point is, where one's life goes, all this is available to one in the presence. How foolish it is, how terrible if you have not found your island of peace within your own soul. It means you are living without the discovery of your own true home.
In order to help ensure that the material needs of our fellowship are met, the offering will now be taken.
Prayer doesn't change things. Prayer changes people, and people change things. I invite you now into a moment of prayer and meditation that we may be changed so that we may change the world. Eternal Spirit of life, of love, God of many expressions, we come as a community of faith this morning to share in our joys and our sorrows, to gain strength by being with one another. We live in a broken world, and so we pray that we have courage and we have strength to do what we may to change that world, and that we have courage and we have strength to do what we may to change ourselves. There are far too many people today who do not know the comfort of a home, the simple gift of a meal, the peace of a home not strife with war. May our being here together bring us to a place where we may share those simple gifts which we too often take for granted with the world, with our neighbors, with our friends, with all those known and unknown who are also a part of our lives, for all life is connected. In this time of silence, may we listen for that small, still voice within us, that spark of the divine that calls us to be holy in this world. In the name of all that is holy, amen. I invite you now to join in our second hymn, number 114, Forward Through the Ages, standing as you are willing and able. God, faith, sin, prayer, Jesus, church, grace, evangelism, religion. Words, simple words, but powerful words. Yet, for the most part, these words have been lost in the vocabulary of modern liberal religious communities. Oh, they are alive and well in some other religious communities, but for liberal religions of today, we seem loath to use them. Rather, we like words like ultimate reality for God. Or perhaps we speak of wrongdoings instead of sin. And don't even mention Jesus, except, of course, if it's Christmas or perhaps Easter. And even then, we qualify, hem and haw, and use so many disclaimers, it becomes almost impossible to decipher whether we are talking about someone named Jesus or Jesus as an abstract concept. Our language has become so constricted that we are hard-pressed to address social and political issues in religious terms. Yet we are a religious denomination. I know this because the Internal Revenue Service tells me so. A couple of years ago, the president of our association, Bill Sinkford, caused quite a stir when he suggested that we needed to develop a language of reverence. Some of the reactions were so strong that you would have thought he was saying we should all get down on our knees and start praying the rosary. All he was saying was that it was time that we started using language to express in concrete terms what we mean when we say that the first source of our principles is the direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures. And I believe he was right. Though I believe he didn't go far enough. I think it's time for a radical shift in our language to reclaim not just the language of reverence, but the language of religion. Simply put, we need to take back the words. Of course, the first question might be, why should we care so much about language? After all, these are just words. But words are never just words. They are symbols that hold with them the full extent of our human emotions and thoughts. They are the primary means by which members of a community communicate with one another. That's fairly simple and straightforward. What I'm really talking about now is the power of those words. Remember, as a child, you used to hear, sticks and stones can break your bones, but words can never hurt you. And usually it was said right after somebody said something that indeed hurt you. Of course, words can hurt, sometimes even more than a stick and a stone. Words used as a weapon can inflict hurts that extend well beyond the moment that they are uttered or heard. And yet words that heal can be the salve to mend all wounds. Words and how we use them are important. If the last presidential election taught us anything, it is that words and language do matter. If we progressives are to win the battle for the hearts and minds of the American public, well, we had better start doing a better job of communicating our values in terms that are not just heard, but felt. And religious language is as much about feeling as it is about thinking. It speaks to us on a gut level. It is one thing to say that disrespecting the inherent worth and dignity of another person is wrong. It is quite another to say that that is a sin. And I believe that that is what sin is, a failure to recognize, respect, honor, cherish, and uplift the inherent worth and dignity of another person. Of course, one of the problems with language is that we might not all agree on the definition of a word. What I have defined as sin may not be what other people have defined as sin. But I think this is all the more reason for us to reclaim language. If we begin with the premise that there need only be one definition for religious language, then the question will become, whose definition are we to use? Unfortunately, the answer to that question in the 21st century of America is the religious right. It is as they have taken exclusive rights to certain words, and with those words, they have taken the power of those words as well. And when asked who gave them that right, well, the answer is, we did. When we stopped using religious language, we gave other people the right to use those words and define those words in whichever way they saw fit. And they have seen fit to define them in narrow terms. Our reaction, our only recourse, it seems, has been to reject not only the narrow definition, but to reject the word itself. But it is time for us to open the language. We can reject narrow definitions, but not the words. It is time to reclaim those words and challenge those very narrow definitions. Every Unitarian Universalist minister I know tells this story. They were walking around railing against God and had become just rabid atheists. And someone comes to them, some wise sage says, well, tell me about the God that you don't believe in. I probably don't believe in that one either. Every minister I know tells that story. So that sage really gets around. But the point isn't to talk about some great epiphany. Well, there's another word we take back. When they saw the proverbial light and became tried and true theists. No. Rather, the point was that they were challenged at some time to release their hold on a definition of God that very few people held anymore. Having spent 3 years in a Christian seminary, albeit a radical Christian seminary, I can pretty much tell you that the idea of God as the old man with a beard in the sky manipulating the machinations of humanity is an idea that has been dead for a very long time. I'm not sure that anyone but the most fundamentalist of fundamentalists still holds on to that idea. Anyone except perhaps far too many Unitarian Universalists. In order to avoid using God language, we hold on to an idea of God that has been dead for the longest of times. It's as if we are suspended in the early part of the 20th century. Well, it's the 21st century. And it's time to declare that there's a new God in town. It's time to take back that word. I can hear you there in that back row over there saying, well, but really, I am an atheist. I don't believe there is anything beyond human reason. So I don't want to take back that word. It doesn't mean anything to me. To which I say, God bless you. I'm not proposing that everyone take back this particular word. If you have done your soul searching, your theological homework, so to speak, and you have come to the conclusion that there is nothing bigger than the individual, then don't try to claim this one word. There are plenty of others you can reclaim. But if you are someone who, like me, struggles to define that thing that I sense that is bigger than I am, that I am a part of, that I might call that interdependent web of existence, then I ask, why not call that God? Why not use that tiny little word to describe that very big presence? And what does that word conjure up that makes us so afraid to use it? I know for me, one of the things I was afraid of was being mistaken for someone that I am not. I was afraid that by using God language, someone might mistake me for, oh, say, a Baptist. Nothing wrong with being a Baptist if you are one, but I'm not one, and I've never been one, though I bet a few of you were wondering if I had been one at some point in my life. I was afraid that people might conjure up a whole host of things they thought I believed without ever asking me. And I have to confess, I was guilty of that too. When someone used God language, my first instinct was to think, oh, Lord, they're going to try to convert me. And a few of them did try. But one thing I have learned is to stop making assumptions about other people's beliefs. Now when someone uses God language, I say, well, what do you mean by God? And I have found that a rich conversation usually ensues, and that somewhere in the conversation we find common ground. Not on the definition per se, but on the sense, the feeling of that experience of that transcending mystery and wonder that we all express. That mystery we experience when we look into the eyes of a newborn child for the very first time. That mystery, that wonder we experience when we stand in awe before the grace of nature. Something just beyond words, just beyond the outer boundaries of our reason, that great mystery of our very existence. A conversation, a door can open that only happens when we begin to take back words. In these days and times, we are faced with another fear. The fear that comes from seeing how the language of religion has been used to justify anything and everything. The recent case of Terri Schiavo and the unconscionable actions of Congress to interfere in a private matter in the name of religion stands as an example of our worst nightmare, that the separation of church and state could be violated in such a way that authoritarianism might emerge disguised as religious privilege. But this is all the more reason that we not allow a single view of religion to prevail in this country. If only one side of that fence is allowed to use religious language, then our very fears could indeed become our reality. Unless we religious liberals stand up and proclaim in uncertain religious terms that there shall be no dictatorship of religion in this country, a country founded on a principle of religious freedom, we shall indeed find ourselves under the heavy hand of someone else's religious agenda. We need to stop sitting on the sidelines of religion and bring our religious agenda into the foray. And we Unitarian Universalists have a long and rich history of doing just that. We need to remember that time and time and time again, as a religious community, we have put our faith in action to do those things that call for justice. And we do them not as members of a secular organization, but by members of a community of faith. This year marks the 40th anniversary of the death of the Reverend James Reeb, a Unitarian Universalist minister who was martyred in Selma, Alabama, in the struggle for civil rights. We do not honor him by putting plaques in the offices of the Unitarian Universalist Association, but we honor him, his memory, and the memory of all those who gave their lives for that struggle by continuing their struggle, undergirded by a religious faith that we articulate in words and deeds. Could we do these things without the language of religion? Well, absolutely we could. But there is a difference when we just think of it as a good thing to do, or when we believe it is our faith that compels us into action. If it is a good thing to do, it is an optional thing to do. And it is too easy when it becomes difficult to say, well, I don't have the time or the strength for that struggle anymore. But if it is a part of our ground of being, if it is part of our covenant with life or what we may call or God or not God, then it is not optional. It is not okay to sit down when we are tired. It is time to stand up again and again and again until we have created that beloved community, until we have created that world of peace and justice. Will language alone change the world? Well, no. And yes. Because just as prayer doesn't change things, it changes people, so too, language changes people. It changes how we think of ourselves. It changes our identity. It changes how we communicate who we are and who we are not to the rest of the world. And by doing so, it changes how they react to us. There's somewhat of an irony in talking about reclaiming words to shape our identity. The irony comes from the fact that as Unitarian Universalists, our early identity was shaped by redeeming a word. When our religious ancestors were first emerging from Calvinistic Puritan churches and questioning the Trinity, the term Unitarian was an insult. And yet, as our movement began to take shape, we began to embrace that word. Finally, William Ellery Channing, bravely in his Baltimore sermon of 1821, declares, "We are Unitarians." Of course, in those days, we were Unitarian Christians. But we have moved past that. But a new identity arose because we took back a word that was meant as an insult, became a word of power. An identity that we can articulate on its own terms, not as anti this, not as anti this, but what we are, who we are as a people. Because Channing didn't only embrace and redefine the term Unitarian, he shook Christianity to its roots too. He took back two words in one sermon. This is our legacy. This is our challenge. Can we again take back words? Choose which words you will take back. Not all of you will take back God. Not all of you will take back Christianity. But at the very least, we will take back the word religion. This is a religious community. This is a community of faith. This faith community stands for justice. This faith community stands for peace. And we shall proclaim that as a community of faith, as children of God. God, faith, sin, prayer, Jesus, church, grace, evangelism, religion, words, but powerful words. Who shall own them? I say, we shall own them. Will we have exclusive rights to them? No. No, we will not, nor should we. It is not ours to create a dictatorship of our ideas either. We will share them, and by sharing them, we will put our imprint upon them. And by doing so, we will bring the liberal religious agenda back on the map of the American landscape. The stakes are very high. We live in troubling times, and we have much work to do if we are to set about the task of repairing the world. And the work begins when we are courageous enough, committed enough, convicted enough to take back the word and with the word in hand forge a new world where justice will roll down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. The choice is ours. The time is now. The task is clear. Take back the word. Amen. And blessed be. And we'll take a little break and sing a hymn. So I invite you now to sing, to join us in hymn number 23, Bring Many Names. Thank you.
We have some time for sharing. If any of you would like to share your responses, ideas about what we just heard, please raise your hand and I'll bring the mic over.
Hi, I'm Jack Topchick, and I want to thank you for your talk. Words are my profession, and I know how powerful they are. One thing that struck me after the election in November was an article I read in which the columnist said that until the Democratic Party understands why people go to church, they will never again win an election. And I think that may very well be true. People go to church for words, and words mean things. And I appreciate your words today.
I appreciate your words, too, and I think it's important that we re-examine some of the ones you mentioned. But I also think it's very important to hold on to words like free, rational responsibility, to hold on to ones that we've taken to our bosoms.
Hi, thanks. Henderson Cole here. I certainly do want to say, too, that the your powerful message was well received. We don't really know how to argue for the liberal religion against those in the right because of the words. But it's difficult to take back some of the words. Perhaps we could start by not capitalizing the word God. Just a little g. That would be one way to begin to take it back from the capitalization just implies the old meaning. So there may be some just little tricks, things of that kind. But I know in the continuing battle between the creationists and the evolutionists, those biology teachers that teach evolution and in the high school, I heard one of them say that the only way she has found it to be at all successful is to start the class by letting the students say what they think now is the origin of the human species. And she gets all of the biblical stories and they get them out, and they get them up front before they start, so that she, in a sense, begins where they are now and then moves them slowly into the evidence and the of the science of the discovery of evolution. So I don't know if there's some way that we could follow that technique. But what concerns me a little bit with respect to you personally is I would like to understand why you feel the need to feel that there's a something greater than yourself.
I don't feel a need. I feel what I feel. I feel it. And I don't deny that I feel it. It's like, do I need to feel it? No. But I feel it. That's about it.
Have you ever thought about why you feel it?
It is something I've always sensed, something I continue to sense, and something I it's like, why do I feel love? Mm-hmm. Because I do.
That's not adequate. I propose to you that you feel it because you felt it as a child.
No, I feel it to this day.
Because you were utterly dependent on your parents.
I feel it, and I continue to feel it. And I will not... I feel it. That's it. I mean, I sense it. I feel it. I see it when I look into someone's eyes. I know that there is something greater than I.
Well,
I have no idea to define it
in narrow terms, but I sense it, I know it, and I can live with that. I need not have an explanation of what it is. I just know it, and therefore it compels me in a certain way to recognize that in you and everyone else. And that is how I live my life, because you shall know me by my deeds.
Well, you see how difficult it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not. I didn't say it was easy.
I mean, I feel the awe when I look into the night sky. I feel the awe of the cosmos, of the universe. When I look into the eyes of a newborn child, I feel a great deal of awe. I think that's the closest thing to a miracle that we experience every day, how in a nine-month period of time, the laws of nature, not God, but the laws of nature can take trillions of random atoms and put them together into a functioning human being. It's as close to a miracle as anything I can imagine.
Absolutely.
But I don't attribute it to God.
And
no,
you
don't attribute
have to.
It to a power greater than myself.
And you know what? You don't have to. But I challenge you to take back religion from people who say that, A, religion must have God. Because that's one of the things that... How could you have religion with God? Well, yeah, you can. And so one of the challenges is to say religion can be without God.
No, I'm with you mm-hmm. with respect to we got
Absolutely.
To take back the word religion.
Absolutely.
I think you speak very powerfully, and I too think it's a sin to not uplift the worth and dignity of every human being, but it's, in fact, the enormity of that, and in fact, the impossibility often for me to walk two blocks in Manhattan without being aware of it, that I can't... impose that word, use that word with its full meaning. But I do examine it. And all of those words that you mentioned, in fact, I think all of the people here examine them profoundly and use them maybe guardedly. Last week, was it? 2 weeks ago. A guest minister, I think Mary Thiebaud works with you in Montclair.
Mm-hmm, yes.
She discussed Jesus profoundly and used a description of Jesus very, very carefully in words that I understood to be very powerful and mean something that wasn't shortcutted. So, mm-hmm. thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. This is actually really, it's an interesting conversation now because I've just started coming in the last couple of months here. And one of the things that is just, every week I've been, we have not talked at all about God or religion, or I've not heard really people use those words here. But what I have heard, like really, every week something that has touched me, I heard somebody tell a real story about her father and the value of time on this earth. I have heard wonderful stories about, you know, practical, about relationships, on love on Valentine's Day, how to love each other, or even when it's difficult, or how great it is when it's good. I've heard the value of community, really, again, practical ways people have struggled and succeeded. And these sort of practical real life things have touched me so much, and I worry that if you bring in that kind of language, you take away from the practical spiritual experience that we have here, and then it becomes this kind of thing that we struggle for. So that would be my concern, because I've loved so far everything that I've heard, and it's really, I've come out every week being touched and knowing exactly what those people have said, but maybe if you start getting into this other language, it would change the real value of that. And And I don't care if it's flaky. I don't care, because I'm getting something out of it. So I guess that's important to me. So.
Thank you so much. What a great sermon that was. I'm Graham Clark. I love to hear these kinds of things, and I love discussion about language. It's very, very, very powerful. Very, very, very. In fact, there are some people that exist in the world today, quite a number of them, who cannot name themselves because we have no language for them. And that is, if you want to count sins, probably the greatest, because they cannot exist without language. I'm a pretty good Unitarian, I find, because I don't have to agree with you. What I know about you is that whether we agree or disagree, that is not the main idea. That we welcome our differences is the main idea. And I like throwing that your ingredients into the stew because I think it should be there. I like it. I also think that the what we're trying to approach is the idea of mystery. Look into the child's eyes, wonder what it's all about, look up at the stars, mystery, mystery. What can't complete the thought, can't complete the thought. You can't concretize it. You can't. And we all have our own levels of comfortability with mystery. Some of us are not very comfortable with mystery, and some of us love mystery, you know? But I think the soup tastes pretty good today.
I am so grateful for what you just said. What is your name again?
Pamela.
What Pamela said, because I've been here just about like a year and a half or something, and to me, that all these words, they're thrown around so much, but when we share our lives and the experiences of our lives, like Pamela was talking about, when we're all talking about the richness and the wonder and the feelings of our moment to moment living, that becomes our Bible, really, in a way. You can find truth, the whole truth of God in any given moment in your life, I think, if you're looking at it with eyes wide open and your heart wide open. And what I find refreshing about being here is that we're not just throwing around the words like we did in my childhood church, throwing around the words of God and truth and love and brotherhood and justice. We're just talking about real experiences and real responses from our souls and hearts to those experiences and sharing our lives together like that. And the building of community is the experience of all those words that we can just grab a hold on to and then only experience superficially. And I agree with Molly that when you truncate the search for the meaning behind the words by grabbing a hold of the word quick, make sure you have it, got to have that word, put it in your pocket, and you truncate the search for the meaning in it, you lose the meaning in it. And that's what I think has really happened. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lynn Palmer, and I'm reasonably new. I've been here about 5 times, and I was raised with no religion. And my whole life, as I've grown, I've read about and experienced all kinds of things. And in the last maybe 15 years or so, my religion has been whatever the corner church is, and that's what I've been doing until most recently the corner church hasn't worked for me anymore. So I'm trying to get a handle on, and I know I can't do that in 5 weeks, you know, each week we're getting a little different message, and I love it. It's sort of a challenge. It makes me think. I want very much to have some kind of a belief system. And I like the fact that it's played so very, if I can say, loose in a way here. The thing about, and your message today is rather clear but conflicted to me in the way I'm receiving it. It's sort of, it's God, now you see him, now you don't. And it just, I don't know, if I want to get a little understanding of the Unitarian Universalist thought, what I'm hearing today sounds very political to me. And I don't know if politics is part of the church. And I don't mean that in a critical way. Mm-hmm. But that's a message that I'm getting, and I'm sort of, well, if I might say, rejecting that a little bit, if it is part of the church, you know. So that's all I have to say.
Just a couple more.
Thank you, Reverend, for delivering so beautifully a sermon that I think we all have really needed to hear. I know we have a number of visitors today, but our congregation, as you so clearly demonstrated, you know we are in a time of transition. And I think words like action, proactive words like getting off the sidelines, is so what we need to hear. I personally want to thank you for just reminding me that being a Unitarian is a responsibility. And you couched your whole sermon in such a tone of urgency, and that politicism, the political aspect of UU really coincides with our history of social action. And I just want to thank you for that, because every now and then I sort of want to just, you know, recoil and go into that little lazy thing. But it really is necessary. And regarding language, words are really, it's so amazing how easily we can misconstrue. I'm just prefacing this. I know I'm going to tell the story wrong because I always do. But there was that one joke about the teacher, a college professor, who was explaining the laws of logic. Henderson can help me out. And was stating how two positives can never make a negative. And the kid in the back said, yeah. And then the last thing I want to say, just for the record, the three words you will seldom hear me say, I miss Joe today of all days. I'll fill you in later.
Time for one more.
Hi, I liked how you said that, you know, just doing a good thing is not enough. You know, it's like what drives us to really get behind a belief and work towards it and sacrifice for it, you know, because civil rights or women's rights or, you know, a lot of the things that we believe in, peace, ecology, you know, all those kinds of things that we believe in, you know, what drives us to keep doing it, even against the popular tide or whatever, or what drives us to remain liberal despite what's happening with the rest of the country? I mean, there's something more than just, you know, it's not just optional. I mean, we, you know, there's something spiritual that drives people to sacrifice for their beliefs. And I think that's really important that you brought that up.
We have some time for sharing. If any of you would like to share your responses, ideas about what we just heard, please raise your hand and I'll bring the mic over.
Hi, I'm Jack Topchick, and I want to thank you for your talk. Words are my profession, and I know how powerful they are. One thing that struck me after the election in November was an article I read in which the columnist said that until the Democratic Party understands why people go to church, they will never again win an election. And I think that may very well be true. People go to church for words, and words mean things. And I appreciate your words today.
I appreciate your words, too, and I think it's important that we re-examine some of the ones you mentioned. But I also think it's very important to hold on to words like free, rational, responsibility. To hold on to ones that we've taken to our bosoms.
Hi, thanks. Henderson Cole here. I certainly do want to say, too, that the your powerful message was well received. We don't really know how to argue for the liberal religion against those in the right. because of the words. But it's difficult to take back some of the words. Perhaps we could start by not capitalizing the word God. Just a little g. That would be one way to begin to take it back from the capitalization. Just implies the old meaning. So there may be some just little tricks, things of that kind. But I know in the continuing battle between the creationists and the evolutionists, those biology teachers that teach evolution and in the high school, I heard one of them say that the only way she has found it to be at all successful is to start the class by letting the students say what they think now is the origin of the human species. And she gets all of the biblical stories, and they get them out, and they get them up front before they start, so that she, in a sense, begins where they are now and then moves them slowly into the evidence and the of the science of the discovery of evolution. So I don't know if there's some way that we could follow that technique. But what concerns me a little bit with respect to you personally is I would like to understand why you feel the need to feel that there's something greater than yourself.
I don't feel a need. I feel what I feel. I feel it. And I don't deny that I feel it. It's like, do I need to feel it? No. But I feel it. That's about it.
Have you ever thought about why you feel it?
It is something I've always sensed, something I continue to sense, and something it's like, why do I feel love? Mm-hmm. Because I do.
That's not adequate. I propose to you that you feel it because you felt it as a child.
No, I feel it to this day.
Because you were utterly dependent on your parents.
I feel it, and I continue to feel it. And I will not... I feel it. That's it. I mean, I sense it, I feel it, I see it when I look into someone's eyes. I know that there is something greater than I.
Well,
I have no idea to define it in narrow terms, but I sense it, I know it, and I can live with that. I need not have an explanation of what it is. I just know it, and therefore it compels me in a certain way to recognize that in you and everyone else. And that is how I live my life, because you shall know me by my deeds.
Well, you see how difficult it is.
Absolutely. It's not. I didn't say it was easy.
I mean, I feel the awe when I look into the night sky. I feel the awe of the cosmos, of the universe. When I look into the eyes of a newborn child, I feel a great deal of awe. I think that's the closest thing to a miracle that we experience every day. How in a 9-month period of time, the laws of nature, not God, but the laws of nature can take trillions of random atoms and put them together into a functioning human being is as close to a miracle as anything I can imagine.
Absolutely.
But I don't attribute it to God.
And you
don't attribute
have to.
It to a power greater than myself.
And you know what? You don't have to. But I challenge you to take back religion from people who say that, A, religion must have God. Because that's one of the things that... How could you have religion with God? Well, yeah, you can. And so one of the challenges is to say religion can be without God.
No, I'm with you, mm-hmm. with respect to we got to take back the word religion.
Absolutely.
I think you speak very powerfully, and I too think it's a sin to not uplift the worth and dignity of every human being, but it's, in fact, the enormity of that. And, in fact, the impossibility often for me to walk two blocks in Manhattan without being aware of it, that I can't impose that word, use that word with its full meaning. But I do examine it. And all of those words that you mentioned, in fact, I think all of the people here examine them profoundly. Mm-hmm. And use them maybe guardedly. Last week, was it? 2 weeks ago, a guest minister, I think Mary Thiebaud works with you in Montclair.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She discussed Jesus profoundly and used a description of Jesus very, very carefully in words that I understood to be very powerful and mean something that wasn't shortcutted. So, mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Hi. This is actually really, it's an interesting conversation now because I've just started coming the last couple of months here. And one of the things that is just, every week I've been, we have not talked at all about God or religion, or I've not heard really people use those words here. But what I have heard, like really, every week something that has touched me, I heard somebody tell a real story about her father and the value of time on this earth. I have heard wonderful stories about, you know, practical, about relationships, on love, on Valentine's Day, how to love each other, or even when it's difficult, or how great it is when it's good. I've heard the value of community, really, again, practical ways people have struggled and succeeded. And these sort of practical real life things have touched me so much, and I worry that if you bring in that kind of language, you take away from the practical spiritual experience that we have here, and then it becomes this kind of thing that we struggle for. So that would be my concern, because I've loved so far everything that I've heard, and it's really, I've come out every week being touched and knowing exactly what those people have said. But maybe if we start getting into this other language, it would change the real value of that. And I don't care if it's flaky. I don't care, because I'm getting something out of it. So I guess that's important to me. So.
Thank you so much. What a great sermon that was. I'm Graham Clark. I love to hear these kinds of things, and I love discussion about language. It's very, very, very powerful. Very, very, very. In fact, there are some people that exist in the world today, quite a number of them, who cannot name themselves because we have no language for them. And that is, if you want to count sins, probably the greatest, because they cannot exist without language. I'm a pretty good Unitarian, I find, because I don't have to agree with you. What I know about you is that whether we agree or disagree, that is not the main idea. That we welcome our differences is the main idea. And I like throwing that, your ingredients, into the stew, because I think it should be there. I like it. I also think that the what we're trying to approach is the idea of mystery. Look into the child's eyes, wonder what it's all about, look up at the stars, mystery, mystery. What can't complete the thought, can't complete the thought. You can't concretize it, you can't. And we all have our own levels of comfortability with mystery. Some of us are not very comfortable with mystery, and some of us love mystery, you know? But I think the soup tastes pretty good today.
I am so grateful for what you just said. What is your name again?
Pamela.
What Pamela said, because I've been here just about like a year and a half or something, and to me... The that all these words, they're thrown around so much, but when we share our lives and the experiences of our lives, like Pamela was talking about, when we're all talking about the richness and the wonder and the feelings of our moment to moment living, that becomes our Bible, really, in a way. You can find truth, the whole truth of God in any given moment in your life, I think, if you're looking at it with eyes wide open and your heart wide open. And what I find refreshing about being here is that we're not just throwing around the words like we did in my childhood church, throwing around the words of God and truth and love and brotherhood and justice. We're just talking about real experiences and real responses from our souls and hearts to those experiences and sharing our lives together like that. And the building of community is the experience of all those words that we can just grab a hold on to and then only experience superficially. And I agree with Molly that when you truncate the search for the meaning behind the words by grabbing a hold of the word quick, make sure you have it, got to have that word, put it in your pocket, and you truncate the search for the meaning in it, you lose the meaning in it. And that's what I think has really happened. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lynn Palmer, and I'm reasonably new. I've been here about 5 times, and I was raised with no religion. And my whole life, as I've grown, I've read about and experienced all kinds of things, and in the last maybe 15 years or so, my religion has been whatever the corner church is, and that's what I've been doing until most recently the corner church hasn't worked for me anymore. So I'm trying to get a handle on, and I know I can't do that in 5 weeks. Each week we're getting a little different message, and I love it. It's sort of a challenge. It makes me think. I want very much to have some kind of a belief system. And I like the fact that it's played so very, if I can say, loose in a way here. The thing about, and your message today is rather clear but conflicted to me in the way I'm receiving it. It's sort of, it's God, now you see him, now you don't. And it just, I don't know, if I want to get a little understanding of the Unitarian Universalist thought, what I'm hearing today sounds very political to me. And I don't know if politics is part of the church. And I don't mean that in a critical way, but that's a message that I'm getting. And I'm sort of, well, if I might say, rejecting that a little bit, if it is part of the church, you know. So that's all I have to say.
Oh. Just a couple more.
Thank you, Reverend, for delivering so beautifully a sermon that I think we all have really needed to hear. I know we have a number of visitors today, but our congregation, as you so clearly demonstrated, you know we are in a time of transition. And I think words like action, proactive words like getting off the sidelines is so what we need to hear. I personally want to thank you for just reminding me that being a Unitarian is a responsibility. And you couched your whole sermon in such a tone of urgency. And that politicism, the political aspect of UU really coincides with our history of social action. And I just want to thank you for that, because every now and then I sort of want to just, recoil and go into that little lazy thing. But it really is necessary. And regarding language, words are really, it's so amazing how easily we can misconstrue. I know I'm going to tell the story wrong, because I always do, but there was that one joke about the teacher, a college professor, who was explaining the laws of logic, Henderson can help me out, and was stating how two positives can never make a negative, and the kid in the back said, yeah. And then the last thing I want to say, just for the record, the three words you will seldom hear me say, I miss Joe, today of all days. I'll fill you in later.
Time for one more.
Hi, I liked how you said that, just doing a good thing is not enough. You know, it's like what drives us to really get behind a belief and work towards it and sacrifice for it, you know, because civil rights or women's rights or, you know, a lot of the things that we believe in, peace, ecology, you know, all those kinds of things that we believe in, you know, what drives us to keep doing it even against the popular tide or whatever, or what drives us to remain liberal despite what's happening with the rest of the country? I mean, there's something more than just, you know, it's not just optional. I mean, we, you know, there's something spiritual that drives people to sacrifice for their beliefs. And I think that's really important that you brought that up.
Thank you for all of your responses. They show the richness of our community. When somebody says, "What does a Unitarian Universalist believe?" I'm like, well, ask 10 Unitarian Universalists and you'll get 10 different answers. But I think there is something that we do believe. Those our principles, those 7 principles are really important. They do make our common covenant with one another. The first of which, thankfully for the Universalists, is that we promote and affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That's our starting point. That's a good place to start. And the richness of our conversation, that we can do that, really comes from that starting point. As you said, we will disagree. We will not all agree on the language, the use of language, what the purpose of the church is, but one thing we will agree on is to covenant with one another to affirm that worth and dignity in each of us. That's important. I'll close with the words from James Luther Adams, "I call that church free." I call that church free, which enters into covenant with the ultimate source of existence, that sustaining and transforming power not made with human hands. It binds together families and generations, protecting against the idolatry of any human claim to absolute truth or authority. This covenant is the charter and responsibility and joy of worship in the face of death as well as life. I call that church free, which brings individuals into a caring, trusting fellowship that protects and nourishes their integrity and spiritual freedom, that yearns to belong to the church universal. It is open to insight and conscience of every source. It bursts through the rigid tradition, giving rise to new and living language, to new and broader fellowship. It is a pilgrim church, a servant church, an adventure of the spirit. The goal is the prophethood and the priesthood of all believers, the one for the liberty of prophesying, the other for the ministry of healing. It aims to find unity in diversity under the prompting of the Spirit that bloweth where it listeth, and it maketh all things new. As we extinguish our chalice, I know you have words here. These are your words. Carry the flame of peace and love until we meet again. You have been given the gift of this day. Give the gift of your hands to the struggle. Give the gift of your mind to freedom. Give the gift of your heart to justice. As you leave this place and share the gift of you with the world, go with peace in your soul and know that you are loved. Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the Spirit of